Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Lymark Technical Net, that has been going strong for more than 43 years. We're going to turn it over to 44 years any day now. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we find ourselves in front of our radios, helping each other, informing each other, learning from each other, and entertaining each other. And I thank you all once again for joining me here again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. So, as per usual, I will drop for a moment and return to give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions, questions you'd normally ask during the technical debt, but you're not in radio distance, you can't ask it at the time. So you ask it in email, or a topic for discussion you would like to discuss or hear discuss, or if you have a TechNet puzzle that you'd like to share with me that I could use to stimulate some conversation on a future technical net. Or if you have some NASA or space-related story you want to contact Paul, you could send it to me and I'll send it to him, or you can send it directly to him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email addresses, I'll give you two of them, mailbag@ac2gs.com or roy@lymarktech.net. I have a link page of interesting articles and videos that I've seen throughout the week. There are particularly some interesting YouTube. There's a YouTube of supposedly a kind of breakout Chinese humanoid robot that shattered a bunch of world records. Somehow I don't believe it. I think it's vaporware, but we'll see what happens. So there's a YouTube for that. There's also an interesting YouTube where a guy explains how you can design an electromagnet that attracts some pieces of aluminum and copper, which most people would think that that's really not possible because aluminum and copper are not paramagnetic and they don't get attracted by magnets. But it's an interesting YouTube. So there's that, and there's a bunch of articles on the website. You can reach it by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com or links.lymarktech.net. We have a chat room available. It's been real quiet for the longest time. You can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com or chat.lymarktech.net. And as I was discussing with Craig earlier before the TechNet began, I offer an audio stream of the Glen Oaks Repeater. You type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com or stream.lymarktech.net, and it will stream the audio 24/7 from Glen Oaks. And I like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It's had over 1 million visitors. It has archives of the Lymark Technical Net that go as far back as September 2006. So please avail yourself of that. Now let me drop for a second, and I will return and tell you what we got planned for tonight. I have a few short comments to make before the real usual episode of this technical net. So I'll make those, and that will follow with a request for anyone with questions or topics for discussions or comments to hit that push to talk, give me their first call sign, and we'll sort them from top to bottom and throughout the next couple hours we'll discuss their questions or topics. I would prefer if the early questions or topics are amateur radio related, but as always, we open the floodgates to any science and technology, and I will try my best to address it. That should take us to approximately 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That will take us to 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the oncoming week. So that's the plan. If everything works the way it's supposed to, it keeps working that way. So with that in mind, let me drop, and I will get to my first two very short topics. We often bring up the subject of artificial intelligence. I get the sense that there are more than a few people out there listening who are interested in the subject. It comes up in the news. It comes up everything. It's what cryptocurrency was 2 years ago. Everyone sort of is talking about it one way or another. So I just wanted to highlight a funny story that no doubt a lot of you already heard. There was some grifter in Scotland who just abused artificial intelligence. He would have ChatGPT generate electronic books and sell them on Amazon. So he decided he was going to have this Willy Wonka-esque adventure called Willy's Chocolate Fantasy or something. He generated a lot of really low-grade artificial intelligence graphics. He generated really bad artificial intelligence scripts in which they alluded to things that he couldn't afford to pull off. He hired a bunch of actors that he never got around to paying. And he put on a show about a week or so ago in Glasgow, which annoyed the heck out of both children and parents. It was a fiasco of incompetence. And they're still talking about it. So again, this is another example of the kind of scams that artificial intelligence is going to allow grifters to get away with to a degree. So I thought you'd be interested. You know, you could Google you can Google this and see endless YouTubes on the subject. Anyway, that's topic one. Anyone with any comments?
Jim Bravo 2 Alpha Alpha Bravo Right with Twitter.
Yeah, do you have any comments?
Roy, good evening. I'd like to make a comment about the Land Rover that landed on the moon.
Well, I would love to. Came out of Paul's SpaceNet report. So, you know, if you can spare the time to stay tuned past 10:15, that would be a wonderful topic to discuss with Paul tonight.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Back to that.
Yeah, I can't make out all signs, sir. If you talk a little bit louder into the mic or raise up the mic gain, that would probably help.
K-A-T-U-T-F, do you copy?
Yeah, I got you that time. What can I do you for?
In that Willy Wonka scenario, what was it about AI that made that doable that wouldn't be doable otherwise?
Well, I guess the gentleman could, one sec, let me just check something. Testing, 1, 2, 3. No, it's not working. I don't know, does anyone hear me, by the way? Because, there was some little blip in this thing. He probably could have done it if he wasn't a lazy bum, because what needed to be done was to either con someone else into giving him art, or con someone into writing a script. But instead of conning someone to do it, or God forbid him doing it himself, it was all done on the cheap for artificial intelligence. So if you read the script, it made no particular sense. It was kind of self-evident that either a psychotic person had written it or artificial intelligence.
I believe it also promised things like chocolate fountain and stuff like that, which didn't materialize. But, I think the funny thing about the whole affair was there was no chocolate.
Yes, well, there were a lot of somewhat tragically funny things about it. It was ridiculously underfunded. It looked like someone had gone to one of those Halloween stores to get really cheap costumes, and I think there were something like 10 cups of one-quarter filled lemonade, and each kid who first got there got one piece of candy, none of it containing chocolate. It was just like that fire fest thing where the people running it had no idea how to run anything, and so either they didn't want to spend the money, or they made a lot of money off of it. So there's a lot of angry people who want their money back. So I don't think it was money. It was just, I don't know, incompetence on everyone's part. But, yeah, it was never actually Willy Wonka, because he was smart enough to realize that they'd sue his backside. So it was Willy McDuff and Willy's chocolate adventure without any chocolate. So, yeah, it was chocolate-free. So if you kids had any problem with chocolate allergies, then you didn't have to worry about that part.
Well, I guess that means that humans still exceed AI in as far as con jobs go, or constructing con jobs.
Okay, very good. Now on to something a little bit more serious. This past week, a great amateur radio operator passed away. Bob Heil had been in the hobby for most of his life, was famous. He owned Heil Electronics. Many of you have bits and pieces of products that he manufactured and distributed. I, right now, am holding on to a Heil hand trigger for this transmission. I have headsets, I have microphones, I have all kinds of fun things from the Heil Corporation. And he was a great guy. He was a sweet guy. I mean, it's not a case that this is just a guy that I bought products from. It's probably the reason why you're not listening to a quiet radio right now. About 12 years ago, Bob Heil was invited on a podcast that Leo Laporte ran, and they discussed amateur radio, which I listened to, and Bob mentioned that they had done away with the Morse code requirement many years ago, and Leo Laporte, who was basically one of those guys who talked about Apple computers a lot and had a syndicated radio show, said that he was going to get his own license. He was going to go out there and study. He would get his tech license. A month later, he would go for his general. Later, he would go for his extra. He talked ICOM into donating a lot of equipment, about 20 grand worth of. And long ago, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a ham, but I couldn't really find anyone to help me. And so I got distracted and moved on to other things. But having heard that conversation between Leo Laporte and Bob Heil, I said, gee, if Leo can do it, yeah, what the hell, I could do it. So basically here we are today. Not for that, I probably would not even know that the Morse code requirement has gone the way of all things. I wouldn't have taken my exam, and I wouldn't be here on TechNet. So I appreciate that, Bob. And it's not only some parasocial contact. I emailed him repeatedly. I still remember he answered me at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he ran, of course, Ham Nation, which was an amateur radio podcast. And once or twice he even suggested that I do a segment there, but I don't know. That was before my net control operating days, and I thought it was a little too much, so I didn't take the offer. So I just want to mention that Bob Heil passed away this week of cancer. He was a great man. He was very important for amateur radio and for modern music. He was involved in a lot of bands, giving them systems to amplify their music for stadiums and such, and he will be missed. Anyone want to make any comment? Please feel free.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
And if anybody wants to see this fellow speak, he was a terrific speaker. He did a presentation for Limark a couple months ago. So if you go to the Limark website, limark.org, and you know, go to the YouTube presentation, and you find Bob Heil, you know, K9EID, listed on that. You click on that. It's probably about a 1 hour, a little bit longer than a 1 hour presentation. Very well done. All about his life history, microphones, everything he was involved with. Like you said, he was involved with the Grateful Dead, The Who, and, you know, different groups like that. But with all the audio. You might want to try that to see what this guy was all about. It's a big loss. Anyway, back to you, Roy. WS1.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, he was big into organ music. He played the organ. There are recordings of him. They would play it on a radio station, I think, every weekend for years and years and years. And he was the most unlikely friend to rock stars that you could imagine. Very quiet speaking, very pleasant, bow tie wearing sort of guy. Not something that you would think of as a guy hanging out on the bus with the Who or something. So he is a fascinating man, and he will be missed. Anyone else with any comments? Okay, I will take that as a no. So we return to our usual modus operandi. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, preferably the first ones, try and make them amateur radio related if possible. If not, you know, anything open to science and technology. So anyone want to put their name on our list tonight, please hit that push to talk.
W2BZ. Bravo to Alpha Dollar.
Okay, Rich recognized. Can you give me your call again? Bravo Alpha Papa.
King Bravo 2 Alpha Golf Papa John. It's a question about the Land Rover. I don't know if you were talking to me at the other station. What's your question about that?
Yeah, I don't know if that was you earlier or there was another person. I mentioned that, you know, Paul makes a point of discussing all these NASA and space related things. So I don't feel that comfortable. Kind of, I mean, I'm more than happy to kind of join him in the SpaceNet report to chat a bit, but I would prefer if you could to hold off until 10:15 or so when Paul does the SpaceNet report, because you know that's kind of the subject at hand probably tonight with other things. So could you hold on until then?
Yeah, as long as the body hands hold out. Yeah, if not, I'll have to leave it for another time. Okay, I wasn't sure you were talking because there was another station trying to cue in on the me, the low station there, but then he finally pulled them out. All right, very good, Roy. Thank you.
Okay, so as I said, Rich, you recognize. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Okay, that was a very strange transmission. Maybe you need to adjust something, to just little spurts or something. I didn't hear a real voice, so whoever attempted to transmit, try and check your settings on your radio and give it another try.
November 2, Zulu Charlie John.
Okay, John recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, another very, very noisy signal. And a very noisy signal. I don't think I'm getting through. Well, let me cycle something.
You're doing great out here, Roy.
Oh, really? Okay, now it's working. But, you know, sometimes I'm just not... I have a radio picking up the signal. So it might be that it's desensing from another transmitter nearby. So maybe that's what's going on. Okay, thanks for telling me, Paul. So we have Rich, we have John... We have another person with a very, very low signal. So you want to give it another try. Okay, I got the tail end of WOR, but there's a lot of noise. So if you could either reorient the antenna if you're talking on it, HT or raise the gain on your output or do something to put a little bit more signal in the direction of the repeater, I'd appreciate it. Nothing heard. Well, hopefully he'll try again later. Once again, this is AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. We have two people down on the list. I'm a greedy guy. I prefer a couple more. So if there's anyone else who wants to put their name on the list for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Okay, perhaps later. So, Rich, you're up first. What's the question or the comment for tonight?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody else. I have a few things on my list tonight. First, I want to make a comment about AI. A company in Israel asked me to go over a real estate company asked me to go over a contract, 96-page contract that they had translated from Hebrew to English. It was virtually unreadable. I've never seen anything like it in my life. My father was a lawyer. He taught me how to read contracts. His motto was to keep it simple. And the next thing, it took me 45 minutes to go through 8 pages. Well, last night, I got the idea, why don't I run this through ChatGPT with the prompt that said, make this simpler. And I went clause by clause or paragraph by paragraph, and it did an amazing job of distilling what contract was talking about, making it understandable, making it simple, but including all the points that the translation had. I was blown away by it, just blown away. I've used ChatGPT before, but never with, a real task that I had to ask it to do. And I got to tell you, if I were a paralegal or a lawyer, I'd be sort of scared about what's coming down the pike in terms of legal documents and being able to write them and interpret them with ChatGPT. I just wanted to mention that. The other thing, ham radio related, and then I have one non-ham radio related question. I just want to take a poll of people who monitor HF, because we're supposed to be nearing a sunspot cycle top. But since my mag loop has been out of commission, pending a redo of it, I really haven't been on HF, and I'm wondering if it seems like, especially from 10 meters to 17 meters, if it seems like we're at a sunspot cycle top. So if anybody is on HF, listens to HF, please let me know if the bands are wildly open yet or not. I don't think it's going to compare to the sunspot cycle in the early 90s, but we'll see. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Okay, Rich, we'll open it up for the rest of the guys. I could just say, well, one thing is you don't really, someone mentioned this about a month ago here, you don't know when you're at the peak until you pass the peak. So there's no really way to tell that you're at the peak until later on if the sunspot activity declines. And then you know that you hit the peak. But last sunspot cycle kind of was screwy in that for the first time in recorded history, it was a biphasic peak. So it peaked, and then it dipped, and then it peaked again. So you don't know until after the fact. But it certainly is going strong. I usually have a 10-meter net every Sunday morning on 28.380. This morning at 11 o'clock, I got into the shack. I turned everything on, and it's an insane asylum because the ARRL is having a international DX contest. So there is not a kilocycle free on the technician's phone band for 10 meters. I could not set up a net without stepping on other people, so I just let them have 10 meters. So this morning was self-evident that propagation conditions were fantastic. I was hearing people from Scotland. I was hearing people in Germany, all over the darn place. And the band was cluttered with activity. So as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to 10 meters, it's significantly different than it was during the sunspot minimum of about 5 years ago. Anyone else want to throw out their opinion? Please feel free.
AD2DU.
Yes, Alex.
I got 45 different countries in the single sideband voice contest, the farthest being Turkey at just over 5,000 miles. Most of it on 10, 17, and also 15. AD2DU, over.
Okay, very good. I mean, these are the golden days of the solar sunspot activity, the activation of F1 and F2 layers up there. Will it get better? Maybe. Maybe not. As I said before, only time will tell when we've hit the peak. But it's certainly peak-like activity going on. I was deeply concerned last summer, because although there was sunspot activity, there apparently was something disrupting the ionosphere that was not allowing for decent propagation. 10 meters was almost dead despite good numbers. But that faded away, thankfully. And so, as Alex mentioned, and as I mentioned, 10 meters is certainly alive and well in the nearby bands that operate on the same tendencies. Anyone else want to put in their 2 cents? Please do.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, 40 and 80 meters was very good yesterday and last night. Like you said, they had the single sideband international contest going. 40 meters are, usually not that easy to get overseas, but, I wound up with Czechoslovakia, and, I went over to 80 meters again on sideband as well. 80, I wanted to test my antenna. I raised my 80-meter dipole up, sagging due to the high winds in the winter. So I wanted to test that anyway. But that's no problem. I got into Portugal and all, and later on in the night, I wound up on CW. Usually I'm on CW. I just stayed on sideband because of the contest. But, yeah, I would say 40 and 80, even yesterday and last night were definitely wide open. You can hear the yellow contacts here too. There are many DX contacts. And then one guy was calling CQ, and he wasn't saying DX. I went to him right away. He said, "I'm just looking for DX." And this fellow was over in Jersey. Okay. Anyway, back to you, Roy. WS to it.
AC2GS. Okay, that's good to hear, Paul. I seem to be getting an echo here now. Anyway, usually 40 and 80 doesn't really require sunspot activity. If anything, activating deep the D layer too much produces a lot of noise. That's why during the daytime, 40 is okay. You can get by, but 80 is kind of very problematic, and 160 is kind of gone. It's just noisy as heck. So that's why these bands work better at night when the sun wasn't really exciting any of the ionosphere. But they're good to hear. Sometimes people get annoyed that their favorite band, 80 and 160, isn't quite as productive during the sunspot maximum. So they get a little bit annoyed at us crowing about what's going on 10 meters. I haven't heard too many people giving any stories about 6 meters. 6 meters used to be called the magic band, but for whatever reason, I haven't heard too many people mention it lately.
I wonder how the band, how like 10 meters would be when it's not an international contest, if it would be very active. I don't think so. I think it's probably very quiet. And maybe I'm thinking that that's due to not such a great sunspot cycle, but it may just be due to very little use of the band. And Paul, did you say you heard Portugal on 80 meters?
Do I have a voice?
Yeah, Paul, please.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, 80 meters Portugal, 40 meters in Czechoslovakia. And not only hired them, you know, I worked them, also, you know, five bands. And then, of course, I tune up and down the bands, and I could hear all many, many patients coming in. So one right after the other. Back to you, Rich.
All right. Well, what I'm doing my mag loop is I made it bigger because I wanted to reach up into the reach down into the CW portion of 40. But what happened was I am no longer able to get on 10 and 15 and 17. So I'm going to put it back to the original size I had it, and I'll be able then to work it on 10, 15, 17, and 20. Well, 20 it works on now, but so that's what I'm doing with my mag loop. Somebody said to me in Florida that I had such a great signal with a barefoot 10 wood 440 about 80 watts out or so. He said, don't touch your antenna. It's working great. And I touched my antenna. Now I have to undo it. Roy, could you go into a little further about why 40 and 80 are not subject so much to the sunspot cycle?
Okay, AC2GS. One other thing before I get to that point you mentioned earlier, it's a lot less active when there's no contest because there's a far less motivation. It doesn't necessarily mean that propagation isn't there. It's just that the two kind of compound each other. You know, if there's a contest and there's a lot of people who don't do a lot of operating unless it's for a contest and they realize that a band is open, they flood to it like they're crazy people. When there aren't contests and I'm doing the 10-meter net, I talk to the West Coast. I talk to England. I talk to Germany. I talk to Poland. I talk to Africa. So the propagation conditions are much better now than 5 years ago when I talked to New Jersey and Staten Island. So that's the case. Getting back to your question, the problem is that different frequencies respond differently and operate on the level of different layers of the ionosphere. 160 meters and 80 meters is a low energy band. They don't get past the D layer, so what you do anything beyond the D layer is kind of meaningless as far as they're concerned, and also they're very sensitive to what goes on the D layer. If the D layer is too energized, rather than just making it a good refractive material to bounce radio signals back and forth, it's 160 and 80 don't need a very energized D layer. They usually work much better at a lower level because as you put more energy into the D layer, in addition to the refraction that bends the RF back that gives you the propagation, it introduces noise. And the lower the frequency, usually the more atmospheric noise and lightning and all kinds of stuff make your signal-to-noise ratio worse and worse. On the frequencies we're using tonight, most of the noise is internal to our receivers. At low frequencies, most of it is atmospheric. So that's why 160 and 80 work better in the middle of the night when the sun is pointed at the other side of the earth.
All right, so is it true then that the D layer is energized by the amount of sunspot activity on the sun, and that's what influences the skips and the long distance hops because the D layer is being conditioned, let me put it like that, conditioned by the solar activity?
No. The D layer is to a degree active 24/7. you know, in the middle of the night where overhead from you, the D layer has not seen the sun for 6 hours, it's still active enough. It still has enough ionized gases to do its magic. And as that level is optimum for 160 and 80. As you pour more energy into it, it becomes too much of a good thing. So what you want is a relatively weak D-layer in order to get the propagations on 160 and 80. The D-layer has no effect on, say, 10 meters. It goes right through the D-layer, and it has to have, it only really gets affected by the F1, F2 layer. But the 160 and 80 refract off of a weakly energized D-layer best. So it's best to operate those frequencies in the middle of the night when it hasn't energized by any sunspot activity. If anything, excessive sunspot activity can leave it a little over-energized, and propagation would not be as good under those circumstances.
So what is the sunspot activity due to the ionosphere?
It causes more outbursts that land on the ionosphere and excite the gas molecules and ionize them, which causes them to go from radio transparent to non-transparent, where they act like a prism or a lens, and they refract the electromagnetics in the way that a prism will reflect light back if you point it at a certain angle on a prism.
All right. Well, what also sort of in the same category of propagation, when somebody says that they're reaching somebody else long path versus short path, what do they mean there?
Okay. You don't necessarily only have one bounce off of the ionosphere to the Earth and that's it. You can have multiple bounces. If the conditions are right, your transmission will go up to the ionosphere at a specific type of an angle. It'll get refracted back to ground, hit the ground, get reflected back up with a incidental angle that's further along, that then hits the ionosphere again, gets refracted. And so you could have a bunch of bounces. That means that you don't necessarily take the shortest path. There are circumstances that we talk to Frank, and by the way, I recognize you, Frank. We'll get to you in a minute. He's on EchoLink, which is kind of difficult to maneuver with us quick keying. But you could go the wrong way around, and since the Earth is a spherical object, if you travel far enough in the opposite direction, you'll get to where you want it to go. It'll just take you a farther distance. So I hope that explains it.
No, it doesn't. Short hop, it bounces, you know, a few times getting to the other station. I know that. But long path is different. I think, I don't know, but maybe long path is only one huge bounce rather than a series of short bounces. Because I hear guys on 20 talking to Australia, and once in a while they say, you know, they're talking to them long path rather than, I guess, short path. So I still don't understand it, Roy.
Hey, okay.
Say again?
Yeah, American Ham King. Maybe I could explain it to Rich. Hi, Rich. Is that all right, boy?
Yes, please do.
All right, let's have an example. Let's say you're in New York and you hear a station in Hawaii, and there's another station in Australia, but we'll leave that out for a second. So the quickest way to get to Hawaii on bouncing of signals is in the short path. You would be transmitting from New York, maybe one or two hops, three, and you would get to Hawaii. However, if you wanted to go long path, the signal would continue around the entire Earth, and 15,000 miles later,
it gets back to you from the guy from Hawaii transmitting to you. That's long path. Both will hop the opposite way around the Earth. Is that a good way to say it, Roy?
Yeah, it's a very good way. You're going in not the most intuitive direction. You most people think in terms of the shortest distance is the best approach. So in this particular case, it's possible to point your antenna to the east and talk to Australia. Rather than, if you look at a map, it looks like you should point it to the west, obviously, because the closest distance is westward, except we live in a globe which is circular. So you could go the long way around. So that's the concept of long path, that you take the distance that goes in the opposite direction, knowing that since it hugs the surface of the Earth, eventually it goes around the Earth and lands at your destination.
Okay, so let's say you want to talk to Hawaii from New York. You would point your beam east instead of west. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you... sometimes the signal's stronger, going long path and short path. I guess that's why you would choose to do it, right?
Yes. The ionosphere, unfortunately, is not a uniform thing. Unfortunately, if you see graphic representations, it sort of looks like an eggshell or something. It's not. It's sort of like a river with ebbs and flows that cover the surface of a oblong shape of the Earth, but it doesn't have the same intensity everywhere, and it's especially affected by exposure to the sun. So some areas that are exposed to the sun, the ionosphere is much more turbulent and active, and farther away from the sun, less so. So there are occasional times where the propagation conditions are actually better going the long way around.
Hey, do I have a comment?
Sure, Mike.
Okay, you mentioned the ionosphere. I figured the best example of that would be the aurora borealis, which is in the northern hemisphere. It ebbs, it flows, it moves. That is like an analog of what the ionosphere is going through. So the aurora borealis is undulating, and our ionosphere is constantly undulating. I hope that makes it clearer.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. It's a good analogy, Mike. I tend to prefer the river analogy because it's somewhat more two-dimensional, I think, than the aurora borealis, which is just globular all over the place. But, you know, whatever makes it easier for people to understand.
WB2AHK, one more time.
Sure, Chet.
All right. To Rich, maybe I heard wrong. I thought you said, did you say if you wanted to talk to Hawaii, point your beam west? I'm pretty sure you said that. Like, take a globe, a round globe, have one, and draw a spot where New York is. Take a ruler, a flexible ruler, and connect the ruler to Hawaii. Let's say, for argument's sake, it's 5,000 miles. You point your beam west for the short path. If you wanted to do the long path, you take the same flexible ruler and draw it from New York City all the way west, all the way back to Hawaii. That's long path. Am I right, Roy? Go ahead.
I'm a little confused. You would point it east, right? You wouldn't point it west.
No, you would point, if you're in New York, you want to operate to Hawaii, which is off the coast of California, a couple, 3,000 miles. The closest way would be from New York across the United States towards California and then continuing on to Hawaii. That's short path. If you wanted to do a long path, you turn your beam... I'm sorry. You're right. Oh, I see now. Right. All right. Let me start over again. Right. You would point your beam west to get to Hawaii. If you pointed towards California and eventually straight ahead, it would get to Hawaii. If you want to go long path, you would point your beam east from New York all the way around the entire world. That's long path.
Okay, very good, Chet. We now fully agree with each other.
Okay, I got it now. I just wanted to ask Mike, though, What is the undulating ionosphere? How does that impact signals? Because it's moving constantly and swirling and turning, how does that impact the signal?
Well, first of all, you have to realize, everybody says it reflects off the ionosphere. No, it refracts. And it all changes constantly. It's not constant. And the reason why I say, if you've ever seen a real aurora borealis, I have, it's in constant motion. It's a river. It's a sea. It's a fluid. It's not a constant disco ball in the sky, so to speak. That's a bad analogy. But it's constantly undulating, which is why you get dips and swirls. It's just not constant. It's fluid. Maybe that's a better way of describing it. The ionosphere is fluid. It's dependent upon the solar radiations. It depends upon the magnetic flux of the Earth and other magnetic celestial bodies, like the moon. It's a river. It's a sea. It's fluid.
We so really what's have actually to give happening when you experience QSD, you know, when the signals go up and down, what's happening with the signal in the ionosphere?
It could go off into space. It could be not reflected and absorbed by the ionosphere because it got a little more dense above New York, let's say. Again, it's a river. It ebbs. It flows. It gets lighter, it gets more dense, less dense. It's not constant, which is why the signals ebb and flow, and they're never really constant.
Is that the sole reason for QSD?
You mean, what do you mean exactly by QSD? Define it.
QSD is the loudness. And then the softness, if I to use non-electrical terms, it's the strength of the signal going up and down.
Well, yeah, obviously, because again, you have to remember, it's not a satellite that's rebroadcasting, which is, let's just say, linear in fashion. It's not. Think about your bouncing a light beam off a river. Okay, and you want to reflect it to the other side. That light beam from a laser or flashlight at night is going to change and undulate depending upon how the river is flowing. It's not constant. It's ebbing and it's flowing. Think of it as a very dynamic thing. All right? And remember, it's an electromagnetic, it's a bunch of ions. The air is ionized, which means that an electron has been kicked off by the radiation from the sun. Therefore, it's an electrical particle. This electrical particle is affected by magnetic fields, electric fields, and just the spinning of the Earth up by itself. So remember, it's not constant, and it's kind of random.
So once again, the strength of the signal, you know, a guy could be 20 over S9, and then all of a sudden fade out to, you know, an S3. That all has to do with, and it solely has to do with the changing nature of the ionosphere. Is that true, Mike?
Yeah, because the ionosphere is the refracting medium. Refracting medium. And it, yes, and they're doing, and maybe you can comment about the HARP experiments going on up there in Alaska, where they're actually shooting a beam, so to speak, up into the ionosphere, measuring it, the scientists. Use that as a topic of discussion. How about the HARP experiments going up there in the north?
Let me see if I have this. Mike, I appreciate the idea. Unfortunately, the HARP experiments were mostly government, so they didn't really document anything and publish it. They gave it away to a college, and they're doing some experiments. It's kind of been one of the paranoid things about the United States as a weather control station type of nonsense. But let me just kind of reach around and hopefully at the end I get the poor Frank who's been trying to key up through Echolink and no one's been letting him get through. But I just want to be, before we pause for Frank, electromagnetic waves reflect, they do reflect, Mike, too. They reflect, they refract, they scatter, they absorb, and they transmit. And the amount that they reflect and refract back will have a big impact upon the amplitude of the signal that you receive that you will consider in terms of QSP. But there is one other reason why the ionosphere gives you something that you perceive as QSP, but is not necessarily fading in amplitude. It's Faraday rotation, which rotates the angle of polarization of the electromagnetic waves. So you might have a horizontally polarized antenna, and you might be receiving a horizontally polarized signal. But the Faraday rotation can rotate it into the vertical orientation, and that change in polarization angle will be perceived by you as a diminished amplitude being received from your particular antenna. So I hope that makes sense. I really want to pick up Frank right now. We can go back to all of this right after Frank says his piece, but he's been delayed for probably about 15 minutes. So Frank?
No problem. I've just been sitting here answering sales leads. That's what it got to be. A couple of points. First of all, I kind of like your simple analysis of long path, working Hawaii with the antenna pointing east as opposed to pointing west. The thing to recognize is it's kind of an overly simplistic model. Radio signals normally follow the curvature of the Earth. Short path is presumably the great circle distance, and a long path can be great circle distance or circular distance going the other way around. If I have a chance, I'll actually take a look at QRZ. I think if you look up stations on QRZ.com, you'll see a distance and beam heading for long path and short path. And that may be the best way to get a handle on what it's actually doing. Since we don't have video here, we can talk forever and probably not really understand it. And my analysis may be wrong. You know, I don't worry about it too much since I generally don't use directional antennas. So if I'm hearing the guy and can work him, that's all I can care about. My dad, who was a Marine maritime CW operator, radio telegraph operator aboard ship just before World War II, used to tell me, who cares if you and the station you're working can hear each other, pass your traffic. Signal reports don't matter. Nothing else matters. Just pass your traffic if you can hear each other, and don't worry about anything else. That's kind of a long explanation, but if we have time, maybe we'll actually take a couple of call signs, look them up in QRZ, and see if we can get an understanding of what long path and short path are. Go ahead.
Okay, very, very good. I appreciate that, Frank. Yeah, when the subject really needs an illustration, and I don't happen to have one on my page, I kind of simplify where it doesn't need illustrations. So maybe for next week, I'll look up some pretty pictures to explain the nuances. But in the gross kind of description of what's going on, the opposite direction tends to serve the purpose, at least at this time. But I appreciate the nuances. I mean, Mike made a point that it's not reflection, and I remember being very upset by a guy who did a Ham Radio University talk on propagation and just described reflection when it's in point refraction as well. But refraction also has reflection. So, again, it depends upon how deep you want to go into the subject. So I tend to just kind of say the word refracted and move on from there. knowing that refraction, like a prism, uses refraction to reflect things. You have a mirror appearance to one of the sides of the internal prism. You know, that's what refractors tend to do. Anyway, I appreciate what you had to say, Frank. Rich, what's your response?
Well, I still can't visualize the hops, you know, the number of hops takes to go long path versus the number of hops it takes to go short path. Is it just, I think, I remember way back, I think that long path you may just be going and then down again like one time or maybe two times, but short path you're going up and down, up and down, up and down many more times. Would that be right?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you just take a piece of paper, take a pencil, draw a circle, and then go at one end of the circle, and then draw a kind of bigger circle that's sort of the ionosphere, and you're bouncing off that bigger circle. If you do it one time, there's no way that you're going to land, you know, more than halfway across the world. And you're trying to reach more than halfway across the world in the long path. So you're going to have to make multiple jumps. You know, there's no set number of jumps because it depends upon the angle of incidence of where it's reflecting from. But you're still going to need more than one for the long path, whereas you can get away with some angle incidences, one jump for the direct route.
Well, that's what I'm sort of talking about. Like, long path takes less hops to get to the other station, where short path takes more hops to get to the other station. Would that be correct?
No, not necessarily. You can theoretically have a lot of high angle incident jumps for near path, and have wider incident angles for far path. But generally speaking, you probably have more jumps in the long path than the short path, because there's a limitation. Again, you could theoretically construct the angle so that one jump will take you to your destination on your short path, but you couldn't get that far. The most that you could jump is halfway around the world. Probably you wouldn't be able to, but you'd come close to it. And this is beyond halfway around the world. This is, you know, two-thirds around the world. So there's no geometric way to bounce off the ionosphere once and get there from here.
Clear?
Yeah, we had a couple of people who said that they wanted to make a comment. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Whoever wants to talk first.
Hey, Jabil.
Okay.
How you doing, Roy? Hey, Jabil, Jeff and Pelham. Just a quick question. In your experience, your typical 20-meter beam, say a TA-33, whatever it was called, the front, the back is whatever it is the takeoff angle significantly different long path than it is short path? Is it higher, do you think, just because it's like a shorter, stubbier lobe in the back?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if anyone's kind of done a lot of studies on how the takeoff angle in that direction goes. I'm thinking in my head to antenna simulations that I've seen with front-to-back and three-dimensional demonstrations. I don't think it's as clean and tidy as that. I think long path tends to be kind of accidental good fortune that doesn't have any kind of specific method that most people utilize. I could be wrong.
And then if I have also, time I have easy neck up, I'll take a look at it. HTPL, back to neck. Excellent net tonight, right?
Thank you. I'm going to have to check some of that out myself and, you know, maybe write an article on the subject. It's kind of interesting, but, you know, people have, you know, again,
I think it's not inherent in the design of the Yagi, so it's probably one of the multiple factors dependent upon orientation of the parasitic elements and all kinds of other factors. So, but that's an interesting idea. Someone else wanted to say something?
Yeah, well, Chad, again, WB2AH.
Yeah, Chad.
I've also run into the following interesting, I'm sure if anybody spends any time on